through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
All right, we've looked around the NFC West, but now let's take a full look around the NFL. It's time for NFL headlines. There are three teams that are interested, reportedly, in Le'Veon Bell. This is from Sean McDermott. The Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs, and Miami Dolphins. Tom, just so you know, these teams are still set to play the Jets. It's going to be the Le'Veon Bell revenge game, potentially.
Revenge for what? The fact that they paid him all that money and then let him walk away?
I think from Le'Veon Bell's point of view, Adam Gase in this team did not either give him a chance or let him reach his full potential. Like, I not can promise you, but I would bet a healthy sum that Le'Veon Bell thinks that he's a lot better than he was able to be with the Jets offense.
I think that Le'Veon Bell is a narcissist.
Well, that's probably true.
Well, the report is here that the Dolphins are, quote, waving around a fair amount of money in Le'Veon Bell's direction. Can you imagine, like, was it Brian Flores, the head coach down there, like walking up to him, Le'Veon, with a wad of cash, like, hey, man, come down to Miami. We're waving the money around at you. Here you go.
My favorite thing is that these are literally the Jets' next three games. It's not even like, oh, the Seahawks are going to play the 49ers here down the road. They're also going to play Washington down the road. The Jets, you know, down in December. Nope, next three games. Le'Veon's trying to sign with someone immediately to be like, all right, let's see here. Who are we going to play? I think the Chiefs are going to be the last on that list. But honestly,
you
if
you had to bet money,
yeah,
say he went to, I don't know, where would he do best? Miami?
I think Miami has the biggest need.
I mean, Gaskin looks all right, but okay, let's say Miami. Yeah. Do you think that he'll ever return to the form he was in Pittsburgh? Would you bet money for or against that?
Against. I think that it feels unfair to say because I hate the aging argument in general for players. There are many players that buck that trend and still perform really well. KJ Wright, perfect example. But I do think that it hits running backs hardest. And I don't know that that many years removed, he's going to be better than he was with Pittsburgh. Maybe I'll be wrong. I mean, I'd like to be, you know, for his own sake, but I don't think I will. The NFL has ranked their top 10 deep threats, and guess who's leading the pack, Tom?
Daryl Kyle Metcalf?
Absolutely. DeKalen Metcalf. You're absolutely correct. DK Metcalf is leading the pack on the league's top deep threats. According to NFL.com, they looked at the Vikings defensive backs and the completion probability of that 39-yarder on 4th and 10 that he caught on Seattle's last drive was just 31.3%. So not the most unlikely, but also like a pretty difficult catch to make. They also said that he is leading the league in receiving yards gained on deep targets. That means 20 or plus yards in the air by a wide margin. So consider this margin. He has 296 yards on those deep targets. The number two receiver behind him, Calvin Ridley, not a surprise, has 95. That's a healthy margin.
When they say it's that pass had a completion probability, by the way, they wrote it wrong. It says competition, but I think they mean completion, of just 31.3%. Does that take into account who the quarterback and who the wide receiver are?
Yeah.
Or is it just across the league, that particular play?
I believe it takes into account quarterback stats. I know it takes into account, like, down and distance, obviously where the throw is, whether it's what kind of coverage, double coverage, triple coverage, blah, blah, blah. So there's several factors that go into that. I would imagine
he catches that basically one out of every three. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Makes it more exciting. That's for sure.
So who else is on? So we got Michael Gallup, who is turning into a player. That catch he made the other day that set up that field goal that won the game for Dallas. Oh, I mean, first of all, it was a pretty nice throw by Dalton, but how he caught that and stayed in bounds. These receivers, in this era, like particularly over the like the last 5 to 7 years, the athletic ability that even a mediocre receiver who puts up mediocre stats has is like out of this world.
I know.
They're just incredible athletes. They're not as good as figure skaters, but they're incredible athletes.
Nothing. No one's as good as figure skaters, Tom. You've also got a couple rookies on here. Henry Ruggs III with the Raiders is number 4 on this list. Number 5, player that the Seahawks just faced, Minnesota Vikings receiver Justin Jefferson. All of them deep threats. Brandon Cooks rounds it out at 6. Number 7, Chase Claypool, also a rookie with the Steelers. 8, Tyreek Hill. No surprise there, especially with Kansas City's offense. 9 is Robbie Anderson. Number 10, back to the Vikings with Adam Thielen.
We saw that the other night. I mean, look, he runs great routes. He was, like we talked to Wyman about, he just had them stifled. I mean, I guess you don't want to, situationally, you want to keep the play in front of you, but it wasn't like they were running prevent defense in the third quarter. Like, the Vikings had them figured out with Thielen.
Yeah. I think this is also a really fair list. I glossed over Ridley. He's obviously on here. I read it as part of DK Metcalf's, but he is number 2 fairly, I think. He's had an unbelievable year for the Vikings, or excuse me, for the Falcons. That Falcons offense in general has had some really great outings. I mean, they've been off and on, but it really is a shame what's happening in Atlanta because they've had so many injuries on the defense too, but like, Ridley's had a phenomenal season. Gurley just had a 100-plus yard game. I mean, like, they've had big performances.
Tell me if you think this headline or this story qualifies as a headline that should be on ESPN.com, because I saw it yesterday. You just reminded me of it. It's about Matt Ryan. The rapper T.I. thinks that the Falcons should move on from Matt Ryan.
I think that's fair. I mean, he's older.
Is that in any way
bared out,
like,
by stats?
Useful?
What do you mean?
Huh? Like, why is that headline, or why is that a story on ESPN.com?
Well, because T.I. is from the area, well-known, like, popular figure. He's Falcons fan. Like, you know, it's... I don't know. Why do half of celebrities that are in the news make the news, Tom? That's how I feel walking in the grocery store passing a newsstand. Like, it's just what happens.
That's what I was hoping you would explain to me.
Yeah, you got it.
Can you sing me some T.I. before we move on?
I would, but I'm too good, and I can't, because I may then be called by many managers all over the country.
We don't want to pay royalties because it'll sound too similar.
That's exactly what it
we'll
is.
We'll get the knockoff. Uh-huh. It's like a couple beats different.
Yeah, it's the kids bop version. Tom, there are a couple 0-5 teams remaining. The Jets, Falcons, and your beloved Giants. Which of these teams is closest to improving? I have my answer. I don't know if it's the same one as you, but I'm going to let you go first.
I think it's the Falcons, just based on what you said.
It is the Falcons. I said it would be, or I said I thought the Falcons. I thought for sure you'd say your Giants, even though you hate.
You know
their
what? When you
line.
Watch the Falcons play, they look like an NFL team that's probably in the playoff hunt. They look like that in the games they play sometimes. Mm-hmm. The Giants and Jets look like they look like I don't know, that like Arkansas could beat them or at least hang with them. I've never seen such poor offensive line play as I have out of the Giants this year. Their defense is actually good. I think going into last week, they were ranked like 5th in yards allowed, or maybe points. So they've played okay. But if you don't have an offensive line that can protect a quarterback who's not particularly a runner, you have no chance. It's over before it even begins.
Speaking of the 0-5 Falcons, Atlanta has shut down their facility this morning after a member of the organization tested positive for COVID-19. So they just said this was from, quote, an abundance of caution. This is from the article on ESPN.com. So they're still conducting football operations just remotely. And so meetings and everything will be virtual just like they were in the offseason. The positive test was not for a player. That's important to note. Right now, it doesn't sound like any upcoming Falcons game is going to be postponed. I think that because of the recent positive tests in Tennessee, you had Cam Newton with the Patriots. You had, you know, the practice squad quarterback with the Chiefs. You had a couple other guys around the league. The Falcons are just being exceptionally safe by sending everyone home. So I think this always makes people a little bit nervous, Tom, because absolutely no one wants to see the season come to a halt. or at least most people don't. And I think that anytime you see something like this, you get a little bit nervous. And each time it's another positive test, that nerve level just keeps increasing just a little bit, Tom.
Yeah, this is kind of the opposite of what happened with the Broncos, right? The Broncos had to practice all week, mm-hmm. and then their game got postponed, and they didn't get to play. But here with the Falcons, they shut down the facility so they don't have to practice, but the game is staying right where it is.
Well, and it helps that it's not a player that tested positive. So I think that that maybe is why part of the conversation isn't about canceling or postponing a game is always in the conversation, but I think that's why it didn't immediately go to that, because it is a personnel member.
Did it say in the story where or when they're going to reopen the facility?
I'm not entirely sure. They've just entered protocol. So whatever the protocol would dictate is what it would be.
There's a restaurant, I won't say which one, but down the road from me, where one of the workers there evidently got COVID, and they had to shut it down for like a week and a half just to make sure that they could like sanitize the place and make sure everybody else who worked there didn't have it and had to get tested and so forth. Mm. With a facility that's as big as an NFL headquarters for a team, I mean, that's got to be a lot to cover. It's a lot of ground to, you know, clean up.
Yeah. Tom, so that you know, the 425 would like you to be aware that T.I. is unequivocally the king of Atlanta, Tom. That's why it matters here. So, just so you know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
Who else are celebrities that came? But like
Sierra
Outkast came out
from
of Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Sierra's
from Atlanta? Yeah. A lot of musicians are from Atlanta. Atlanta's
Jermaine
awesome
Dupri.
Place. Awesome, awesome city.
Jermaine Dupri?
Oh, yeah.
That's a celebrity? Yes.
Bow Wow.
Hello.
Lil
drop,
Bow Wow.
Drop the Lil, Tom. He dropped the Lil.
He's a grown man now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's up. You can't do that. Like, if you're a kid, you can't have a name that you're going to have to change once you get older.
Well,
like, you want to keep the same name. Ideally, you want to keep the name the same the whole way.
I mean, he kept it mostly the same. Just drop the Lil. Just drop the Lil.
Yeah.
ESPN has also listed as a potential trade ahead of this month's trade deadline, one for the Seattle Seahawks. It would be a three-way trade. Now, I'm going to start by saying, does anyone know when the last three-way NFL trade has happened?
Boy.
Has this been something that's happened? This isn't baseball.
I don't know if it's ever happened in the NFL.
I don't think it has, but this article by Bill Barnwell, it's just a fun article that just hypothetically looks at what could happen. So here's the trade it has for the Seattle Seahawks. The Seattle Seahawks would get center Alex Mack and defensive end Tack McKinley from the Falcons. The trade involves the Falcons, Ravens, and Seahawks. It's a very bird-heavy trade. The Falcons would get B.J. Finney, all right, a 2026 round pick from Seattle and a 21 seventh round pick from the Ravens. The Ravens would get Jacob Hollister. That is the trade. I don't mind the addition of a defensive end. I think Ethan Posick has been fine. Barnwell's argument is that, yeah, Posick's been okay, but Matt gives them a top-tier kind of center that they could have in a Super Bowl run. And then offloading Jacob Hollister would be for salary cap reasons.
Man, switching centers midstream.
I know. It's not
so comfortable. You know, it's not one of those things where, like you're upgrading your car engine where just mechanically you hook it up and it works.
Yeah.
You know, I wish Jake were here because he could explain this better. But based on what I've heard, the way I've heard quarterbacks talk about centers, like that relationship is a unique one. And if it's working, I'd like to keep it the way it is.
Tom, are you ready for some
not
trivia?
Something I want to mess with. Oh, God, am I ever.
All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Stacy, first down to you.
You
noticed a crazy stat.
Thanks for the emphasis.
Just an absurd stat about this Rams team. What is it?
Now, spoiler alert, because I did mention this in our NFC West overview, but I was just blown away by the difference in the passing yards surrendered with the Rams defense compared to Seattle. Preface from the jump, I'd rather have Seattle's team. I think this team is the best team in the division. But we all know the passing defense needs to be better. it needs to be better by quite a bit, because here's what this stat is. The LA Rams defense has given up the fifth fewest passing yards across 5 weeks, 939. They're one of a handful of teams that have under 1,000. The Seattle Seahawks defense has given up 1,852 yards. That's a almost 1,000-yard difference, which is insane. I think that Dave Wyman joining us to kick off the 1 p.m. hour made me feel a little more comfortable with it. I mean, he made it clear that, like, look, the Seahawks defense isn't lacking for talent. Like, they've got guys that can play. Not only guys that can play, they've got a couple All-Pros with Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams. They should be improving here. Mike Silver, who we played sound from him to open the show, believes the Seahawks will improve on both offense and defense. So I think it's not an end of the world scenario, but it is an eye-opening difference between these two teams right now.
I'm hoping Jamal Adams can have an impact on most games like he did on that first one or the first two going forward.
Yeah.
Because that will make a huge, huge difference.
Second down. Tom, today's trivia questions, they're based off the schedule this week. Because it's the bye week, you're allowed to peruse the rest of the NFL schedule. Question number one. You're welcome. Cleveland facing Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh on Sunday. The Browns have not beaten the Steelers in Pittsburgh since October of 2003.
Oh, what a year!
I want to know from you, who was Cleveland's starting quarterback that day?
Ooh.
Okay, well, it's got it. Cleveland's that day was...
Cleveland's.
It's
not Baker Mayfield.
He was like seven years old then.
Kelly Holcomb is one possibility.
Don't give him any hints. Curtis, don't even look at him. Look away,
the
Curtis.
Other possibility would be like Tim Couch. I'll go with old Kelly.
It's Tim Couch.
Oh! You had it. You threw the pass. He caught it. It was in the end zone in his hands, and he dropped it. Oh, Tom.
So they went from Tim Couch to Kelly Holcomb back to Tim Couch?
Yeah, there was sort of a... They didn't want to lose on their investment. Number one overall pick. You got to see what you have in him.
Yeah.
Holcomb took him to the playoffs. Wasn't that the last playoff game they were in?
Yeah. The last playoff game they were ever in was a wild card round at Pittsburgh. They lost that one.
Right.
But,
Kelly Holcomb. All right.
Yeah. Third down. Stacy.
Curtis.
I have but one question for you.
Okay. Good.
Are the Seahawks lucky?
No, I don't think so. Although, I got into a debate, so just to explain this question, I got into a debate with Mike Lewis, who's over on our sister station, Cairo Radio, the other day, and he was saying he didn't necessarily feel like the Seahawks, in his mind, when he's watching the games, look like a 5-0 team. He's like, I mean, they could easily have had the ball bounce the other way in a few of these contests. Is this not just like 2019, when they had 10, you know, games of one or fewer scores, you know, whether it be 1 point, 8 points, whatever, and the ball could have bounced the other way. You had teams like, you know, the Chargers that were essentially the opposite, where they had very, very close games, but just happened to lose a lot of those because the ball didn't bounce their way. I think last year you could say in a lot of those cases they were lucky. If there's more than one area, if there's one key area where the Seahawks have taken a huge step forward this year, it's in point differential. I think that, yes, the defense has to improve, but they've certainly earned those wins. They are sixth in the league at plus 34. Consider that last year they were like the lowest postseason team by a lot. It wasn't even close. I mean, they were trailing every other team with point differential. No other team with a similar record was that close to them. Right now, there's only a handful of teams ahead of them. Baltimore, Green Bay, the Rams, Kansas City, and Indianapolis. Indianapolis has a great defense. That's helping them out. Same with the Rams helping them out. That's the reason they're also plus 46. Green Bay, Baltimore, just outstanding offenses, obviously. But Seattle's right in there. They're in the pack. It makes sense that they're up there at 5-0. So I don't think it's luck. I think this offense is just firing on all cylinders.
Fourth down.
Scared.
Here we go, Tom.
I believe in you, Tom.
Cardinals Cowboys are on Monday night.
Yes.
In one of the more underrated playoff upsets ever, Arizona beat Dallas in the 99 wild card round 20-7. Who was Arizona's head coach that day?
Why are you like this, Curtis? You like watching people
99
hurt.
99 wild card?
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's go back. So Dennis Green, who was before Dennis Green? Joe Bugle was in there. Buddy Ryan was in there. How about
99?
I'll be stunned if you get this.
Not.
I believe in you, Tom. I think you can get it. Just remember that I said that.
Is it Vince Tobin?
You got it!
What? Wow. Oh my God!
Oh.
The Hail Mary! Wow. You got it done.
Impressive.
I'm so proud of you, Tom. Congratulations. You nailed it.
Heck yes.
All right, let's see what's on tap.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
Tom, just so you know, before I get to what's on tap, you are facing off against Curtis for Bye Bye Bye.
Ooh, yeah,
this
right.
week's quiz about the Seahawks. Now, going
what
on your...
What questions do we get for that?
Well, you'll find out tomorrow. There will be some. I'm going to tailor it a bit. We won't have Jake, so it'll be you two. So I'll do it a bit more trivia history style. But
oh, cool!
Study up. All right, you've got the Dodgers versus the Braves tonight for NLCS Game 4. It's at 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Guys, I got to get back to the fact that I'm just like slightly disappointed that neither of you care too much to have the Braves in there. I am very okay with Atlanta being in the World Series.
Stacy, this isn't 1996 anymore, okay? No one cares about the Braves.
And that's the biggest disappointment here, Curtis.
That it's not 1996 anymore?
You know who cares about the Braves, Curtis? Me and T.I. That's who cares about the Braves. What I would call the king and queen of Atlanta. I'm not the queen of Atlanta.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
I know.
Have you ever been to Atlanta?
No, but it seems like a nice place. I mean, I think we flew over it one time when I went to Louisiana. But... that's fine. All right. We're going to get back to three questions. We've got comments about the biggest sports debate. I'll tell you, or the worst sports debate. I will tell you by far what everyone's least favorite sports debate is. That's been coming in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line all day. We're also going to get back to some questions about who we should be rooting for in Sunday Night Football and who we think maybe is the more sentimental figure between Pete Carroll or Russell Wilson. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Don't forget you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. I'm going to get back to three big questions from today. This time, you guys should feel free to join. You are anyways all the time, but I'll be keeping an eye on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. So text 710-710 with your answers to any of these questions. Tom, I actually changed one of these up. So
without my permission,
without your permission, without you knowing it, I'm catching you off guard here. You and I were listening to a bit of Colin Cowherd while we were show prepping in the meeting this morning, and Cowherd had about Prescott and Dalton. He listed out stats through their first four seasons. Both have 40 wins and similar numbers with passing touchdowns. Now, I think that Dak Prescott is a better quarterback by quite a bit. But Colin Cowherd said, quote, "The idea that there's this massive gap, there really isn't. What I want to know, Tom, do you agree with your former mentor? Is the gap between Dalton and Dak smaller than it appears?"
Well, he is my mentor.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that he owns my thinking for the rest of my life.
I don't know.
No, of course it doesn't mean that. Here's the thing. Andy Dalton did win a bunch of games early on in his career. But is there... like, I just think Dak can make things happen. Remember when the Seahawks lost down there in the playoffs? Wasn't the biggest play of the game the one that Dak ended up making at the end with his legs where it was like... they needed, what was it, like third and... 12 or something like that. Maybe it was 3rd and 10. I don't think Andy Dalton's doing that anytime soon. I think Dak has got a better arm. I mean, I know that Dalton's nickname is the Red Rifle, so you would think he's got a good arm. But I think at this point in his career, Dak's got a better arm. Decision-making, I mean, that... I don't know. Dalton's throwing a bunch of picks. I don't know that they're... that.
Yeah, I feel like those are selective stats.
Yeah.
It's like, what are the most similar ones?
Dalton's not going to lead you in an explosive offense, I don't think. I think that there's something that's explosive about Dak.
Well, and I think that with Dak, there are quite a few of his losses that you can tie to the defense as well. Like, Dalton made a lot of mistakes. Like, yeah, he was a serviceable quarterback when he was there. I think Dallas is lucky to have him as their backup right now. He's been there before. But I don't think that you can just pick, okay, here's a similar number of wins, a similar number of passing touchdowns, and say that they're similar quarterbacks. Like, tell me the difference also between yards, I mean, quarterback rating, interceptions thrown, rushing yards also, touchdowns you've been able to pick up with your feet, so your total yards and touchdowns from scrimmage. I mean, I would guarantee you that's where you start to see the differences between the two players. I just think Dak Prescott is really good and even underrated a little bit because the bar is just so high in Dallas. Like, every guy has to be the guy for this organization. And unfortunately for him, he's compared to guys like Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson.
First 4 years for each guy. I'll go passer rating.
Okay.
You want to do that one?
Yeah.
All right. For Andy Dalton, 2011 to 2014, 80, 87, 88, 83.
You hate to see it.
Dak, 2016 and 19. 104,
see?
86, 96, 99.
Overall, higher.
Yeah, all right. Yards a game. Dak, 229, 207, 242, 306. Dalton, 212, 229, 268, 212 again. So again, advantage Dak for at least three of those there.
How about interceptions?
Yeah, Dak's got 40 picks in... well, four years and then five games. Andy Dalton had wow! Man, he threw a lot of picks. Andy Dalton in his first 4 years, 13, 16, 20, 17.
Wait, how many picks?
13, 16, 20, 17. They actually went down as his career went on. For whatever reason. I guess they just must have had him winging it all over.
But he had 20 picks?
Yeah.
Man.
33 and 20 in 2013.
I think Cowherd is always entertaining radio, but I got to disagree on this one. I think you made the right choice there.
Well, Jake made the point the other day that he thinks Dallas may actually be better off because having Dalton in there, basically, as opposed to Dak, makes the decision for them to commit to Zeke Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when Dak's in there, he's a better passer, better quarterback, so the temptation is to just have him throw it all the time. In this situation, they don't have to, and they may actually be better served doing that, like Minnesota was the other night. I understand that. But just comparing passer to passer? No. Come on.
Yeah. All right, next question on here in three questions. I'm going to give you a chance to answer first this time around. Do you think Bruce Irvin would have improved the defense over the course of the season if he hadn't gotten hurt?
I mean, if you preferred that Bruce Irvin weren't there at all.
Right.
I mean, wouldn't he... He's going to help you even at worst, even if he turned it to death, because he was a starter to begin the year. So, yeah, I got to think that he would have made some kind of impact. I didn't think that they brought him in here washed up. I thought that it was going to be what Benson Mayo has said it was going to be at the beginning of the year, a village with a bunch of guys, a bunch of pass rushers, none of whom necessarily was going to shine out above the other unless there was some big surprise from a rookie. They were going to be in some kind of rotation, and they were all going to have more or less an equal impact. I think Irvin probably just would have been part of that.
The Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, by the way, sounding off on the Dalton versus Dak debate, saying that, well, wait a minute, Dak has always had great offensive lines. First of all, what are y'all being right now? Like Bengals fans? Are you guys like diehard Andy Dalton fans? What are you doing? What are you doing? What You're telling me Dak Prescott isn't clearly a better quarterback than Andy Dalton? I can't believe this.
Yeah, this is one of those things that I don't really... We're talking about sports debates we don't like. How about the types that aren't even debates? Like, they're bad faith conversations because we can't even agree on a starting point.
Right, right. Like, we just fundamentally believe two different things about the quarterbacks, and we're never going to be able to. Like, it is objectively true that Dak Prescott has had better offensive lines over the course of his career than Dalton, but I also think it's objectively true that he's a better quarterback.
Which, right, that doesn't automatically mean that Dalton is better just because Dak benefited
right.
from good offensive line.
Come on.
Bad faith arguments. That's a term I hear a lot lately.
Do you think that Andrew Luck versus Russell Wilson is a bad faith argument? Because our third question on here was your least favorite sports debate. I said mine was Andrew Luck versus Russell Wilson. It's not because I don't think Andrew Luck's potential wasn't sky high. It was. I mean, he certainly looked like he could have been, you know, one of the best. He had all the pieces, but it didn't end up happening. And when you lean on potential in your argument about which quarterback is better, there's no way for you to lose. So I think it's a bad faith argument. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, there's no, you can win each time because you can just say like, well, we'll never know. He could have won four Super Bowls. We'll never know. Like, well,
right.
Then you get away from having to use any evidence.
Yeah. If you say could have, you're just saying that there's a possibility. If somebody says Andrew Luck would have been better than Russell Wilson if not for, you know, the way that Indy incorrectly built the team around him or health, then you're going to have to offer up more evidence than that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't really know how you would do that.
But that's exactly the thing, because there gets to be a point in those kinds of conversations where it's potential versus payoff, like someone's actual production, potential versus production. There gets to be a point where you're like, even with the tools that you saw Andrew Luck have, you have to at one point accept that Russell Wilson's the better quarterback if he's accomplished more. Like, I don't know if it's going to have to be Russell Wilson wins more Super Bowls or what he's going to have to do, but it seems like an unfair argument to just say, well, the potential's always there. The potential's always going to win out.
Russell Wilson did exactly that thing, though, that everybody gives the nod to on Andrew Luck, which is that he has carried his team for at least a year, if not more than a year, at a time when he didn't have an offensive line. Like that exact thing that Luck went through, Russ went through too, and succeeded in spite of it.
Well, and Luck fit the mold, the Peyton Manning mold. Not only was he playing for Peyton Manning's old team, but his dad's a former player. He's coming into Indy. I mean, it was all right there. So, hate that argument. My least favorite sports debate. There it is. All right. We sum it up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
DJ's going to kill me for continually sharing this story, Tom. I'm not going to share it now, but DJ Wilder, producer of Danny and Gallant in the mornings, told an amazing, amazing story about the most embarrassing thing to happen to him in his high school. And it's just a phenomenal story. I want to tell it, but I won't. It's great, though.
Being humiliated in front of a woman at any point during adolescence.
No, but there's a romantic
element
to it.
Something, by the way, you'll never get over.
No, absolutely not. Well, that's the thing. It's in the moment. It's the worst you'll ever feel about anything, because we've all been there, where you embarrass yourself somehow in front of a crush, and you never forget it. And years later, when you're telling the story, it's funny, but in the moment, you're like, my life is over. That's it. It's done. I'll never be happy again.
It's over. Can't do it.
It's a great story. Love DJ. Okay. Let's get back to the conversation about the NFC West. I'm going to take this a little bit further. We were looking at the NFC West, doing a bit of a check-in, saying, what were we right about? What were we wrong about? Both of us agreed that we were, Tom less so because you love the Rams, but overall wrong about how the order of things would shake out through 5 weeks. I thought it would be the Seahawks and the 49ers vying for NFC West supremacy through 5 weeks, and then you'd have the Cardinals and the Rams kind of bouncing between 3 and 4. Instead, You have the Rams at just one game behind Seattle, 4-1, looking pretty good, balanced on both sides of the ball. Jared Goff with 8 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, completing 71% of his passes. And he has 4 consecutive games with a 100-plus passer rating. Just congratulations on that again, Tom. The Rams' defense giving up the 5th fewest passing yards. So they are looking not necessarily like the Rams of, you know, 2018, but much, much better than last year's Rams. So,
yeah, here's the thing. Like, and it's interesting because we could have this same discussion about Carson, I suppose, at some point. But when Todd Gurley was really in his prime, that's when that offense was humming, right? That's when I said they had a sexual offense, and they did. Everything about it was pretty. We remember that game where they played the Chiefs, and it was like 50.
Yeah, everyone scored 1,000 points.
Or 54 to 51, right.
Yes.
And the next day, the reaction across the country was, that's the future of the NFL, and it's going to be great because we got Goff and Mahomes, and they can – I mean, yeah, for that one night, it was pretty. And if you can function at that high a level every single game, that'd be pretty impressive. But they lost Todd Gurley, and when that happened, they weren't fooling anybody. You know what I mean? They knew that Goff, they knew that they were going to try to throw it more than they should. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, Goff really got in trouble. But now they don't really have one guy. They've got Daryl Henderson, Malcolm Brown, and Cam Akers, who are combining to get just about 100 yards a game on average. I mean, they've got a total, let's see, 400, 460, about you know, 550-ish total yards on the ground from the running backs through 5 games. I mean,
yeah,
that's pretty darn good. If the threat of the run is there, then they're in good shape. Because, I mean, we kept wondering last year, well, what's wrong with the Rams? Like, what have they lost? Well, the running game. Gurley couldn't run anymore. I mean, it was that simple. Actually, it began the year before, if you remember, as they
when
the
he was ran
in the playoffs.
And there was this whole conversation we were having leading into the playoffs about what's happening with Gurley, and then it came to a head in the Super Bowl when you're like, what is going on? They're drowning, and Gurley is just there. Yeah,
right. And that was so funny too, because like, what's his name? McVay be asked about it. He'd be like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, who can say?
Another war.
Hey,
we're going ahead just like normal.
Your star running back isn't playing. Is there something up with his knee? Like, are you nursing? No, no, no. He's just hanging out, man. Yeah. You know, everything's totally fine. Nothing to see here, folks. No, I agree. I think they bounced back there. They don't have that go-to guy. They don't have their new version of Gurley, but they've managed to make it work. You're right. The offense is still balanced. Jared Goff also, just objectively, he is bouncing back with a better year. The defense has also taken a step forward. The Rams defense was like quietly good last year. The offense was just so inconsistent that they couldn't stay in it. But I think what you're seeing is that defense and the development of that defense paying off. Because now the offense is scoring quite a bit.
That game would worry me if I'm a Seahawks fan.
The upcoming game?
The game up here and the one down in L.A.
Yeah.
I know that they lost last year in L.A. and won up here in that incredible game where Lockett made that crazy catch. But no CenturyLink fans this time. Pretty high-functioning defense. Offense is certainly good enough with the Rams. I think our defense could be in for a rude awakening in both of those games.
Now, they have some time to prepare. So the first battle between Seattle and L.A. is actually going to be on the road. Sunday, November 15th, they're going to travel to L.A. The game here at CenturyLink is the second-to-last game. It's going to be Sunday, December 27th. Obviously, when anything gets later in the season, you worry, like, oh, are there going to be injuries by then? But on the flip side, you're going to have more time to improve. And if all of us think that the Seahawks can take a step forward, which I think we've all agreed that they can, or at least they have the talent to, they have the time to be able to do that. The Rams aren't the first team that's going to test them right out of the bye week. You don't face them until mid-November. So you have 3 games before then to try to get right a little bit more on defense. But I agree. I think that they are the team in the NFC West by far. The team in the NFC, I'd say, of the remaining teams on this schedule that make me the most nervous, Tom.
Yeah, they may not match up well, the Rams, with everybody, but for whatever reason, they seem to match up pretty well against the Seahawks. And I can't remember if Gurley played in that game last year, the one that the Rams won. But either way, they jumped out to an early lead, and even just defensively, they stifled the Seahawks offense. Now, maybe Russell goes in Schottenheimer. They take a look at last year's tape, and they say, okay, and they look at the guys that are still there, and they say, okay, we're not going to get caught with our pants down this time doing what we did there. So, you know, we won't make this mistake or that mistake.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they react. But, you know, we've got a different offensive lineup here. Posick's there. He's in a different position. Lewis Brown's the same, obviously. But, you know, our left guard situation's all over the place. Different right tackle, obviously. So. Yeah. That matchup in the trenches there will be completely different as well.
Now, here's where I'm taking this conversation. We started by just looking at the NFC. I need you to answer in the final minute here, Tom. Is the NFC West still the best division in football? Someone's making a case for the AFC North.
Yeah, top to bottom, yes. Let's see. Cleveland, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. The best teams of those eight are Seattle, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Rams.
We've settled it. I think so. All right,
close.
You guys.
It's tough.
It is tough.
Really close.
As a reminder, Dodgers versus Braves, NLCS Game 4 tonight, 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. So stay tuned after Bob, Dave, and more. They're coming up next. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Tom, Jake, and Stacey on 710 ESPN Seattle.